The third chalik of the Maimer of the Alter Rebbe, the Yoshet HaMelech LeEsther, page Ayin Aleph, Chassidus Mavaris in the Sefer. When he called me Aliyas for his Karvas Knesses, he saw like a Rishbaruch of the Shabbos Viyantiv. In order to understand what the Rebbe was talking about, the Aliyas and his Karvas, the ascent, the closeness that Knesset Yisrael has with the Kadosh Baruch Hu on Shabbos and Yom Tov, is that then we'll be able to understand how Purim is different. Which we've been talking about the Karvas of Shabbos and Yom Tov. Kol Mashem is always be'iliach ha'iliach v'im ha'mailas. All of these aliyahs, one aliyah after another aliyah, higher and higher, ad roim hamailas, to the highest level, the aliyahs that take place Shabbos Yontif. All of this is called nikra b'shem, nigiyah b'reish hasharvit. All of this is called touching the top of the scepter. Negiya Bereish Hasharvit. Which the king, Hamelech, reaches out, and Esther Malka is nice as Chain Beinov, she touches the top of the scepter, of the royal scepter. Kisharvit HaZahav, what does that mean? What does that mean for a person to touch and to be touched by the end of the royal scepter of Hashem Yisbarach? What does that mean? Kisharvit HaZahav Uvam Shachas Or, this is going to be real chassidus. Everything was chassidus, but this is going to be chassidus of chassidus. Kisharvit HaZahav Hu Ham Shachas Or Ein Saif Baruch Hu. The Sharvit HaZahav means the following. That journey that the infinite light of Hashem Zbach, that the infinite light of God takes, that somehow it's able to travel from the Infinite One Himself, and to reach this world, and to give life to all existence, that makes the plant grow, and it makes the sun shine, and it makes this animal move, and this flower open. Every single drop of chias that's mechaya all the olamos, all worlds, not only the physical world, but all malachim, all angels, all olamos. All of that happens through the world being touched by the royal scepter of the Creator. All that happens can only be by being touched by the end of the scepter. The end. So. And this being touched and touching the end of the scepter of the king is what gives chiyas to all existence above and below. As it says in the Pasuk, as Sharvit HaZahav V'chaya, whomever the king reaches out the royal scepter, that person touches the end of, it says in Megillas Esther, touches the end of the royal scepter, v'chaya, and that person will live. The v'chaya here is not only on a person, of course, in Pnimius it means that only that which is able to be touched by the end of Hashem's royal scepter will have chiyas, will be able to live, will be able to exist. V'chaya. The situation of men in this world, of all reality, is that we're unable to rise up to see and to receive chiyas from the entire Sharvit. We would like to be able to touch, to take hold of the entire scepter of the king, not just the very, very tip. We'd like to be able to have the whole thing. But ve'eni yechayla, la'alas ve'liris l'kabach yusim mekol ha'sharvit. It's impossible. Rak ha'sharvit nishar b'yaday. The scepter must remain in the hand of the king. The king does not give the scepter to anybody. You're only allowed to touch the end of it, and that gives life. But the king doesn't give away. Nobody holds the scepter. There's only an illumination that comes from the end. And this, what we would think, this little light that comes from just touching the tip of the Sharvit, this generates into creation Ahava Aza Kirishpe Esh, powerful love, like fiery coals. Shalhevas Ha'ila Lamala, a flame that rises higher, that rises above, which is called Zahav Ha'elyon, which is called the higher Zahav, gold, supernal gold, Zahav Ha'elyon, Zahav Hatnufa. The Zahav Hatnufa, we'll see more about this. The gold that was brought as an offering into the Mishkan is called Zahav Hatnufa, the Zahav that was lifted up, that was waved and lifted up. The offerings that were waved and lifted up, the Zohar Atnufa. This is the Ahava Aza Kirishpe Esh. The Sharvit is the Sharvit HaZohav. It's called the golden scepter of the king. And the gold here means that even though the world is only touched by the end, by the tip of the royal scepter, that itself, if a person thinks about it, which the Rebbe is going to explain what that means. If one contemplates this, that means thinking deeply. It doesn't mean the usual American way of thinking, which is, you know, maybe until commercial tops. You know, it means thinking bemis. So then that thought can bring a person, and bring not just a person, but the malachim, all reality, to Zohav Hatnufa, to this fiery Ahava, which is compared to the gold that is lifted up. And this powerful burning love comes as a result of a person being mizbainin, thinking deeply, as we said before, which of course is the yisayid of all Chabad Hasidus. Mizbaininus, thinking very, very deeply. Begidulas ein saif baruchu, thinking about the greatness of the Infinite One, and how His infinite light is memali kol almin, fills all worlds, v'soivev kol almin, and surrounds all worlds. Those who have been learning with us the past few years, we've spoken about Mamali and Soivev, and we'll talk of course more about it when we learn the Perish, that Hashem is Baruch's presence is revealed in two ways, filling all worlds and surrounding all worlds. That's the fiery love that can be generated in the mind and the heart of a Jew who's misboinein begidulas ein seif baruch hu, that's mamalik lam seif kalam, and that's called the end of the scepter, the edge. The Ketsehu Ha'elyon, what is the higher part of the scepter? That's by the king's hand. What's the higher part of the scepter? The Ketsehu Ha'elyon Hu K'shemislaheves U'mislahetes Mi'ezbaininusay B'mohusay V'atzmusyizbar. It's when it's the fire that comes when a person is mizbainain, not in the edge of Hashem's presence, which means how he fills all worlds and surrounds all worlds, but when a person is mizbainain b'mahusavat musiyas baruch v'leis machshavat tfisa beklal. So when a person is mizbainain, the infinite essence, which no mind can grasp at all. Reisha d'lo yisyada, the beginning that is unknown. L'shayach be'loshem gedula, we can't even refer to this with the word great or gedula. We can't even speak about it in such a way. We can't even speak about it in such a way. Because saying the word, to say it's godly, it's great, would be insulting, would be diminishing. We could use the terms filling all worlds and surrounding all worlds only on the chiyas, only on the life force and vitality that is drawn from the infinite God. But the Bein Shalom, the Bein Shalom's greatness itself, tavke ein cheike. That's not possible to understand. There was one person, well, there's been more than one person, but there's one famous person who thought that he could understand that. And he brought terrible, terrible destruction to himself and to Klal Yisrael. His name was Kairach, which the Oisi is Cheker. This is brought down in the Svar Makadosh. Kairach thought it was possible before the end of time. Kairach wanted to understand, and he thought it was possible to come to that place. There is no possibility to come to that place. It's not possible to investigate, to inquire, and to understand the nature of his infinite essence. We can only begin to speak about God with the name Yudke Vavke, which is Hashem already reaching the royal scepter out into the universe, and the universe receiving its life and its light from the end of the scepter. But being in his presence before him, meaning his essence, is keloi mamish chashiva. It's like nothing. It's considered as nothing. Meaning as nothing as far as we're concerned. It's everything, but to us it's keloi chashiva. It's mamish keloi chashiva. It's not even. It's nothing. Ukiilu ein sham oilam es klal. As if there is no worlds at all that exist in his presence, in his essence. K'maisha Kosev, as it says in Pasuk, at the end of Navi, in Malachi, Ani Hashem Leishenisi, I am Hashem, I haven't changed. Which means nothing has changed from that perspective of his infinite essence. Nothing has changed before creation, after creation. All that we take so seriously means absolutely nothing. Doesn't exist, Bechlal. It's nothing. V'atu kaidem shenivra v'atu acha shenivra. Just as he was before creation, so he is after creation. Hakol b'shava. It's all the same. L'shayach l'fonav yisbarach b'chinas alnim. It's not shayach when you speak of God's essence to say worlds, to say the word, to speak about worlds. Olam is only possible when Hashem's essence is ne'elam, when Hashem's essence is hidden. But in Hashem's essence, it's not possible to speak about olamas, about worlds. Loi bebchinas mamalei, and not even bebchinas soivev. Not to speak of God's light filling creation, filling the world, and not even speaking about His surrounding light. Ki einai begeder almin klal. Shvichlal, not in the geder to say that it's in the world. Ukedechsiv, as it's written, God la Hashem umula ma'od. Hashem is great and exalted. Bir Elokeinu Harkodshe, in the city of God, on His holy mountain. Roma Chazal, Chazal say, Emesai Nikra Godel, when is the Rebbeinu Shalom called Godel? Only, when can we speak about Him as Godel? Kishuhu Bir Elokeinu, only when He's revealed in this world, in the city of God. Bir Elokeinu. Regarding what was before this world, before the city of God, it's not shaykh to say even gedula. You can't say great. Because all worlds, higher worlds and lower worlds, are as if they don't exist in his essence, in His presence. Elamidas gedulasa hu in visnusai. The only time we speak about Hashem's greatness, that is the result of His humility. That because of His humility, His unbelievable humility, shemislabish mebchinas gedula, that He is mislabish, that He clothes Himself in a physical world where we could speak about Him. That Hashem clothes Himself, that He could be experienced and felt even in this lower world. And here it means even the world of angels, and certainly in our lower world. That's Hashem's. That's what Chazal meant. Wherever you see His greatness, that's where you see His humility. Because in His essence, we can't even speak about His greatness. How dare we even speak about His greatness? The only way we could speak about His greatness is when we understand His humility. That He lowered Himself to bring His light into this miserable world, into existence. When we speak about His humility, then we could say He's great. But as far as His essence is concerned, we can't speak about it. It's bichlal nothing to speak about. Ukamei shekosuv v'yoshev Hashem melech la'olam. That Hashem dwells as the King of the world and forever. Zo v'ata kodesh yoshev tilos Yisrael. And that is the meaning of what we just said, the pasuk that we say in Avodat Zion, Vata Kodesh, Hashem, You are holy, and You dwell, Yosef, You are in this world, through the tehillos, through the praises, the tefillos and the tehillos of the Jewish people perish. Sheli Yoscha tehillos Yisrael hu b'b'chinas yeshiva. Shehu ha'shpolav ha'nove eslecha. Shebem es'ata kodesh umudo migedah zeh. The truth is Va'ata Kodesh. The truth is that you're totally separated from this world, and your essence is beyond anything that we could even speak of. The only thing is that because Yoshev Tehillos Yisrael, the humility of God is such that You chose to dwell, to Yoshev, to dwell in this world. And for that we praise You, and we thank You, and we could speak of Your greatness. When a person thinks about this, obviously, for beginners like ourselves, thinking about this takes as long as it is to read the words. We're not masik with it, you know. How does one mizbayne? Chlal, how does one meditate, and how does his bayneness work, and the whole avoid of his bayneness? And when you see these things, so you're wondering, like, what's the Baal Tanya talking about? He's telling us that touching the edge of the sharvit, of the scepter, brings the unbelievable love, fiery love. Thinking about the beginning of the, on our level, thinking about the beginning of the scepter, the higher point of the scepter, meaning thinking about the unthinkable, not that we can think about it, but thinking about how it's unthinkable, that this causes the most unbelievable love for Hashem Yisbarach. So for people like us, what does that mean to think about it? And the Baal Tanya is telling us that this is the main avoid of a Jew, is to think about this his entire life. So we're thinking about, like, after you think about it for 10 seconds, you're all out of material. So, you know, then we have to have a Yom Iyun on what to think about. And this is all that one needs to think about. And he's talking about, this is something that will last you 120 years. So that's how far we are. I mean, it's a little bit depressing if you think about that. That's how far we are from his blindness. That we're b'chlal nat masi. How could you feel any ahava for Hashem by thinking about these things? And it's we're so far from even understanding what the Baal Tanya meant when he said to be mizbainin in something. That's why it's important to learn his mizbainin. Really, it's a hard thing to learn because it's not something which is taught as a general means of getting closer to Hashem Yisbarach, his mizbainin. There are some small groups of Jews that are Isaac in these things, and individuals, many, many individuals that are Isaac in these things, in his blindness. But we obviously would need to learn to understand more how to be misbeinenim in order to feel that being to feel the end of the scepter. No, we'll come to that too. I mentioned once we're going to learn the parish now. There was a booklet many, many years ago. This goes back already 35 years ago. The shul where I lived in Queens, they announced by Mincha that they had a lot of old the Seamus, and they were going to bury the Seamus, and if anybody wanted to take a look, if anybody wanted to come into the place, the basement there to take a look, you could take whatever you want before they bury the Seamus. So I was already, you know, addicted to Svarim at that time, from an early age, and I was the only one that went to look. I spent a couple hours there, much to my mother's dismay. You wouldn't believe what I came home with. Stuff, but I got a Mem Kedushas Yontif, a Divrei Chaim. It's just that the binding was off a little bit. I still have these Baruch Hashem. I was able to. My father took them to a guy, and they were rebound. I'm talking about from the late 1800s, early 1900s. Wow. I got some. They were going to bury them. I got very, very precious Svarim from there. There was a little booklet that was around 50 pages, typed in English, on his binding. It was obviously written by Chabadsky on his Bainanus. In English, a manual to enter into the world of his Bainanus, of contemplation, of meditation. That changed my life. It didn't even say who it was written by. And it was just like a type thing. It was like done in somebody's house. It ended up in my shul somehow. And I read it a few times. I went meshuggah from it. And then I lost it. I don't know where it is. You know, I don't know. I had it someplace. And, you know, of course I blamed my mother and stuff like that. What happened to it? And my mother blamed the shiksa. That's the usual. I don't know. That's just in my house, but that's the usual say that. It's gone. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know what. And when I was younger, I knew most of it by heart. But over the years, I just can't remember. I can't get. I went to every Chabad place, and I went all over. Nobody knew what I was talking about. It wasn't printed. It was somebody like did it for his family or something. And it was this thing, and it was just a murdic, unbelievable thing. And ever since then, I'm trying to find it, and I can't find it. And nothing that I've seen since then, including Rabbi Kaplan, all the other things that I've seen, are as clear as that little booklet I don't know what to do. I have like a mechilas ahava for it. What?
How can you remember?
Huh? I didn't. I you know, now it's only it's very sketchy. When I was 15, 16, 17, I knew it, mamish, and I don't know. Then over the years, I just then there was a time that I wasn't learning so much that mahalach, and so it's mostly, you know, it's mostly gone. But nobody heard of it. I mean, I went to, you know, I used to go a lot to 770 when I was younger. I spoke to guys, as you see them. So there weren't so many things out then. So somebody would have heard of it. So it seems to me it must be. And I asked the Rav of the Shul, because the Rav of the Shul came from a Chabad family, our old Rav over there. And I asked him, how'd you get it? He says, I don't know. He says, there are a million things that people would just drop off. He says, I don't know how it got into the Shul. And he says, either not, you never saw it. And that was it. It's gone. But it's a malach. It's a malach. But it must be that the Rebbeinu Shalom will gives us ways, and we have to find ways and to learn the inyan of his banyus, and that it should be done in a way that's b'kedusha b'tahara, in a holy way. Not God forbid to go seek ways of his banyus from the side of impurity, from tumma, from Eastern religions, and so much. A lot of people go looking in those inyan. Which there are many nekudas there, of course, that were taken from Klal Yisrael, they were stolen like all holy things from Klal Yisrael, but it's mixed in with terrible, terrible amounts of avodah zarah. There are very few people that could teach this, and there are very few people that, and the people that really, really know how to teach it are not teaching it, and the ones that don't know how to teach it are giving, like, you know, weekend seminars in it. So it's a very hard Indian to connect to. On our Madrega, we at least could want it and think about thinking about it, and that's a beginning. Let's learn the Perish on Ayin Aleph. So, the Gibresh Hashav. Let's read the commentary. Ayidei, on the right side there, around 12, 15 lines down. Ayidei Sharvit Hazav. It's through the what's called the golden scepter. That's God reaching down to the world. God reaching out to the world to give life to all the worlds. It's called reaching out, the king reaching out, holding the royal scepter, the golden scepter. Ayde Sharvit Hazav Mamshech HaMelech Zakash Baruch Hu Chiyas El Kol HaOlamos. Through this, which is called the Sharvit Hazav, the golden scepter, the king extends life. Hashem extends life to all the worlds. As it says, we can't really, existence can't really reach out and take hold of the entire scepter. Like a sharvet nishar biyado, it remains in God's hands. There's only a little glimpse that's from the edge of the end of the scepter. And regarding this, it says, "Vatiga b'reish hasharvet." And Esther Hamalka touched the end, the tip of the sharvet of the golden scepter. Esther, Knesset Yisrael. Esther is the Jewish people. Eini yechayla la'alus l'kabel chiyusa mikol hasharvet. The Jewish people cannot rise to that level of being able to take chiyas from the entire scepter. Ki etzem ha-sharvet. Kloimer. Ha-atzmiyas shel or ein saif baruch hu. Because the etzem, the actual sharvet itself, the scepter itself, which is the essence of the Infinite One Himself, Ram v'nisa, it's high and exalted. V'eina begeder ha-elamis, it's not part of this world. That is the meaning of the Sharvit remaining in the hands of Hashem. It's only the end of the Sharvit. Its lower end. Megila Knesset Yisrael, that reaches Knesset Yisrael.
Ha'orah
This stretching out of the golden scepter to Esther, to the Jewish people, means that the infinite light of God, a glimpse, a ha'ara, of the infinite light of God is contained, is shining only into the hearts and the minds of the Jewish people. Only in the hearts and the minds of the Jewish people. Zehu. V'nikreis Sharvit HaZahav. And it's called the golden scepter. L'fisha Zahav Moira Lahava Kirish Pe'esh, because in the Zohar Kaddish, gold means burning fiery love. Ahava Kirish Pe'esh. Ki yadua de Zahav hu b'chines gevura ve'esh. Gold is gevura and esh, fire. The stam ahava hu b'chines chesed. Now that might be surprising, since we normally associate love and loving kindness with the midah of chesed. But fiery love, esh of course, is gevura. An overpowering love is the midah of gevura. Stam ahave b'chines chesed. Havayesh ahave shibe b'chines gevurais. But there's an ahave that's on the level of gevurais. Hainu da hainu. Regesh ahava v'atzimoyim l'Kadosh Baruch Hu kirish pe'esh, a feeling of love and a thirst for God that's like fiery coals. Uchamay rish pe'esh alahevis aza ha'ule l'mala v'liparid mehapsila v'ha'itzim sh'necheses b'hem, like the flame that is leaping, the powerful flame that is leaping upward and it is seeking to pull itself away, to run away from all that's holding it back, from the wick, from the trees, from the wood that's holding it. It wants to run away. It wants to rise up to the highest source. Kachu inyin ahavizu. So it is with this love. Sheha'odam mizgageya, that a person is longing, v'tzomei la'Hashem, and is thirsting for God. Ba'ifin shechofetz li'parid megashmiyus, to such a degree that he wants to burn away all gashmis, like we're learning in the last chaylik, kisimreis oshan, you remember? Like the smoke. Ukuteris morla vayna. To burn away all the gashmis. The ahava kirish pe'esh. To burn away the gashmis and to be totally separated from all physical reality. That's how powerful this love is. That there were tzaddikim that almost died because of this love. In order to be attached to Hashem in the highest level of dveikus, of attachment. Therefore, not all gold is called. Really, the highest gold is called Zohar Tnufa. That's only the gold that's brought, that's lifted up and brought in the Mishkan. Because gold means serving Hashem with this ahava, with this love that's like fiery coals. It's called Zohar Tnufa. Tnufa means lifting up and waving. Because this ahava lifts a person up. Milamata, from all physical things. It pulls him away from all physical reality, lamala el Hashem, and upwards to Hashem. So gam inyan shavet azov, and that's the meaning of the golden scepter. When a person feels the life force that is coming from the end of the golden scepter, that comes from God, from the infinite light of God Himself, that generates within the person a tzeres esli ahava azal l'Hashem. It generates within him a powerful love for God. Ahava kirish pe'esh. As you see in footnote 28, there are two types of love. Yeshnei mini ahava. There are two types of love. Ahava kamayim. There's love that is compared to water, Nahava Kirish Bay Esh, and love that is compared to fiery coals. Vahevdal Benehem, and the difference between these two types of Ahava. Teva Hamayim Huludabig Nefrodim. It's the nature of water to bring those things that are separated, to bring them and to attach them. Like when you want them, when you want the flour to stick together, you knead it with water. You mix the flour with water. It makes things stick together. V'chein hu inyan ahava k'mayim, and so it is with the love like water. Shumasha neshama nimsheches acharei Hashem k'mayim l'davka b'ayv l'aliyas nifrad min yisbar. That a person, it means when a person is drawn to God and wants to be attached to God, just like the water causes things to be attached. But in this level of love that's called like water, the person still senses his own separate existence. I love so and so, but I have my own separate existence. So a person can love Hashem, and he can also love many other people and places and things and so on. This is an ahava, this is a love that allows for one's own separate individual existence. There's an I, b'chlal. One can say I. In this way of love, one can say I. So, for instance, the love of family is called ahava kamayim. Even though it's a very, very deep love, we're talking about a very deep love. We're not talking about something that's superficial. It's very deep, and still, it is called ahava kamayim. It is compared to love like flowing water, where a person, certainly a brother, a sister, parents and children, there's no question. It's a natural love that one is comfortable with, and one feels a deep connection to family. But oftentimes one does not identify with family members. Even though you feel a natural love, and if anybody starts up with your sister, you know, you kill them. But that's not going to really get you necessarily to have a conversation with your sister, you know. Just if anybody starts up with her, he's in trouble. So then your sister would say, gee, if you love me so much, maybe you want to talk to me? No, I don't want to talk to you. But if anybody starts up with you, I'll kill him. So there's an ahava kamayim, which is comfortable and natural and strong, and you feel an attachment. But you don't necessarily identify, because there's still I. And very often, it's just the opposite. Whatever the parents want, the kid wants just the opposite. Even though the kid's very attached to the parents. The other day, my son said to my wife, was asking a question about something in Panemius, you know, something about something daring and horrible, like what do you plan to do with your life, you know, something like that. It was something audacious, like what do you want to do with your life? And the response was something like, you know, a parent doesn't have to ask everything. Something like that. Which I didn't say anything. I was a good boy. I was so amazed by it that I couldn't speak. And I'm thinking, if I would have ever said such a thing to my father.
You get out.
It was like he's saying it's not in the Olamus. It wasn't the Olamus to say that such a thing. And he didn't say it like in a nasty way. He's a nice kid. He said it in a nice way. But like, you know, there's certain things you don't ask. He says to my Shammai. So you're only supposed to. What does that mean? So my wife was startled by that as well. And after I calmed down a little bit, I said, I suppose the only questions that a mother can ask is, when should I pick you up? How much money do you need? How do you feel? Those are the kind of questions a mother could ask, right? But not anything like that. Who you are, what your life is about, that you're not supposed to ask. So you see that even though there's no question that a child feels inseparable from a parent, in a certain way, but there's another part of the child that is screaming inside of him to say, all I want to be is separate. That's where the Havakamayim, there could be such a thing, with brothers, sisters, parents, and children, and so on. And you have parents that they have such difficulty with a child, God forbid, that you'll have such a thing where a parent will throw up his hand, not a mother, but a father will throw up his hands and say, I can't deal with this anymore. Mothers don't do that, but a father will say, I can't, I just don't want to do it. You know? Just send me an invitation to the chasna and I'll be there. But I don't want to be, I just can't deal with it. Can there be separation in the world of Ahava Kamayim? That's why we once learned a Torah from the Heilige Rav Zina, where the Rebbe of Geshen Henoch said the deeper meaning of when right before they came to Mitzrayim, the last thing that Avraham Avinu said to Sarim, and it was Imri Na Chaisiyat, he said to his wife, say that you're my sister. Right? That's the last thing. It's an amazing thing. In other words, he asked his wife to say that you're my sister. So the Rav Zina said that a Jew has to know that no matter what, just like family, that you might not feel a burning love for God at all times in life, but there's an inseparability that's the metzius of who you are. It's your flesh and blood. Therefore, before coming to Mitzrayim, which means before a Jew goes into terrible nesiyanis, he has to cry out to God and say, even if I won't feel any love for you, at least remind me always that you're my sister, meaning that we're the same flesh and blood. I can't be away from you. There's no way to change the metzius of my family. A divorce, a person can have a divorce, but you can't say it's not my sister. It's your sister. That's the metzius. So imrina chaysiyat means that when a Jew says, I don't know how I'm going to pass any of the tests when I go through Mitzrayim. So the eight says imrina chaysiyat, that you should remember that you're inseparable from God, even though you don't feel that you're inseparable. You don't feel in love necessarily with God, just like you don't feel in love with your sister, but don't start up with my sister. It's called Ahava Kamayim. The second type of love is Ahava Kirish Pe'esh. Masha'ena Kain, on the bottom there, footnote 28, Masha'en Kain Ha'esh, when it comes to fire, Tivoli Pard Vulahafrit as Yisaitis Adavahanis. So if it's interesting, when it comes to fire, the nature of fire is that it breaks things apart. It causes things to decompose. Water brings things together, and fire breaks them apart. It separates the object into its elements. Lahafrit as Yisaitis Adavahanis. Vizo Inyin Ahavakirish Be'esh. That's love that's like fire, like coals. Why is it called Kirish Ve'esh? Love means means together, not apart. What is the meaning of? And this obviously this is a higher Ahava, in certain respects, not in all respects. This is the love of a Chasam Kala. It's Ahava Kirish Ve'esh, Shemifareres as Kaiches and Nefesh Mehusa. It completely obliterates the Kaiches and Nefesh. It takes your Kaiches and Nefesh away from you totally. Until you no longer have any separate existence, you just drown in the other. You don't have any separate existence. It's no longer me and you. When in halacha, the meaning of ishtay kegufay, what that means in halacha, that a wife is the same as oneself. Or Rabbi Levine telling the doctor that my wife's foot is hurting us, right? My wife's foot is hurting us. That Ahava Kirish Pe'esh is when a person can no longer identify himself as anything separate from the other. So this breaks down the person's self. That's why it's like fire that obliterates, it burns away. It breaks down all selfishness. And it breaks down all awareness of the self. And one needs to understand, wherever there's an ahava with a husband and wife, or a chasam kala, husband and wife, that is only a means of responding to one's own selfish needs. It's nahava tli bedavar. It's a short-lived love. That love is not going to get to the 50th anniversary. Not even the 50th, like the young couple separate. There's the, you know, the 50th anniversary of our first saying hello. It's not even going to make it there. When the ahava is an ahava that is only a way of indulging the self, as opposed to letting go of the self. So it's not kirishpe eish. It feels like it's a rishpe, like it's fire. It's just a taiva to satisfy oneself. It's only to satisfy oneself. It's not to give up oneself. And that's how you have all these marriages, which are constantly a battle. I want, she wants. He wants, she wants. Everything in the marriage is just like, who's going to win? So then I find myself talking to people all the time, like, okay, so let's try to make out, you know, he gets Monday, you get Tuesday, he gets Wednesday, you get Thursday, you know, like this stuff. And divide up, you know, this, and divide up that. And all of life is always one pitted against the other. That's an ahava that is completely, completely an ahava. It began with such fire, gewalt. You think that it was the biggest, biggest ahava. It was only a fire of oneself. It's a taiva. It's only to have pleasure. Ahava, which the ahava ke'esh be'emes, ahava ke'rish be'esh, means a complete loss of oneself, which could be very, very dangerous, particularly with women. Since kirish be'esh is the midah of gevura, and the woman's midah is gevura, there are many, many women that become subject to losing themselves in a guy, even the most unworthy guy, which eventually, oftentimes, leads to abuse. Losing oneself in an unhealthy way. Losing oneself in a healthy and holy way is the most beautiful thing in the world. With a worthy husband and a holy wife, that leads to the highest level of yichud, of unity, of connection. Like the Shechina HaKadosh and Knesset Yisrael. But when you have an ahava kirish pe'esh, which many, you have women that they'll fall in love, and you're wondering, it could happen to guys too, but generally this is more of a machla that affects women. You'll have a woman that she's in an abusive relationship, where all he wants to do is take advantage of her, and you see some nice, intelligent, pretty girl, and she's just caught up in this disgusting thing. And you ask, how's it shaykh? How could it be? There's such a gvuras eish, nahava karishpe eish, that it breaks down all feeling of self-respect and all feeling of self. She loses herself in the guy. She can't even identify herself anymore. And he drags her around like a caveman. And she lives a life of complete and total subjugation. Total subjugation to some you know, miserable guy. And people are saying, why don't you get rid of him, get away from him, get rid of him, you know, then she comes in, she's got a black eye, she's got she's got all kinds of tsaros and this and that, and she'll go, wants to talk to a friend, she'll talk to this friend, and the next day she'll say, no, we made up, oh, he's the best, I love him, I can't live without him. Yeah, the people that can't live without, you know, pancreatic cancer also, Hashem Yarachem. And she can't live without him. There's such a loss of self-respect that a nice person would act in a way that's completely contradicts everything she believes and thinks about. This happens to men also, but it's more likely to happen to women, to end up in relationships that are abusive relationships, because they have more of an atiyah, since they come from the midah of gevura, they have more of an atiyah to be inclined to ahava ke'esh. There are millions and millions of women that love the wrong guys. That they just love the wrong guy. And anybody from the outside could see that. Like, you know, and a good friend might say something. Somebody, like, you know, you could see this is just the wrong guy. It's wonderful that you feel that way. But the guy that you're madly in love with is completely, completely below your standards, and he's totally unworthy of you. And it's not a thing of seichel. It could be the smartest girl in the world, but the rishpei eish is so strong that she loses herself. in another person. And she can't identify herself as a separate person anymore. In a holy way, it's a very, very beautiful thing. It's a very beautiful thing. The giving up of oneself. But when it's, God forbid, in the wrong way, and it causes such sorrows, such terrible sorrows, particularly girls, what they suffer from this inyan, it's unbearable sorrows that come from this inyan, from this nakuda. A rishpei esh, that's in the wrong place, in the wrong way, a fire. Fire is the most wonderful thing when it's used in a good way. Fire is gewaldig, but when it's let loose in the wrong way, in 10 seconds it destroys everything.
This is the
meaning of Ahava Ke'esh, which is usually compared to Chasn Kal. In life, of course, a person goes back and forth, Ahava Kamayim, Ahava Ke'esh. Those are two things that a person goes through and feels in life. Okay, Bez Hashem, next week we're going to continue with the Rosh Hasharit on the top of Ayin Beis.